Do that again there,
Okay, I'm
Chairman.
calling the meeting. Calling the meeting to order at 7:31 p.m. And Marilee is just walking through the door.
Somebody's got to do the dishes.
So I am appointing Diane D'Annunzio for Jeremy Flick and Tom Crockett for Steve Clark.
That's seven.
Okay, approval of minutes of May 8th, 2024.
Make a motion to accept the minutes as written.
I'll second.
Motion Tom Crockett, second Arlene Fiano. Is there any discussion? At the conventions, we had people, you know, they were just gathering things through. Is there any more discussion? Any more discussion? Any more discussion? That's it. Next. No, yes.
We're doing it all in favor.
Hearing none, we have a motion on the floor. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? 7-0-0.
No, Jim Cropley, I abstain.
Oh.
601.
601.
I always have to be different, you know.
Go on, is your hand up?
Or Quan's there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's my.
That's probably your cursor. Clicker, right?
My hand is not up.
Where am I seeing him? Oh, there it is. Oh, he's the trailer.
He's trash. In the trailer park, yeah.
Ron, you're trailer trash tonight.
I just noticed that's using my default background photo.
Okay, residents forum. I don't see anyone. Staff reports.
I'll begin. Besides wrapping up the subdivision regulations, which we're going to review shortly, the staff has been wrapping up a certificate of occupancy for 7 Loomis Road for the senior housing 6 units. There's been a couple of things going back and forth, but I think we're at the point where we're all set. So you'll start seeing people move in there shortly. We had a debut today of the Connecticut's Countryside website, which will be going live probably within the next month. They just have to populate it. It's probably shorter time than that, but I don't want to second guess what we have left to do, but it's very exciting. And I think you're all going to like it. Very interactive as well. So if you're a business person in town and you want to post events and that sort of thing, it's going to be very easy to do. And it's going to be connected to CT Visit. So it should get the word out and help people come do things in town.
Since I haven't done my job and contacted anybody, will people who are interested in getting the newsletter and so on be able to sign up on the website?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Anybody will be able to sign up. You don't have to actually be a business person. So yes. Yep. And the last thing, which you'll see next month, is we sent out aquifer protection renewal notices. Those are due, and we will probably hold a special meeting prior to our meeting next month in July, if I have them all. If I don't have them all, we may put it to August, but we usually try to do them all in one night, so they all expire on the same clock. So far, I think I've gotten 2 back out of 8, so I'm working on it.
just have a couple questions. So the new countryside site, is that site already live? Is there a soft go live timeline, regular go live timeline? What is the actual scoop on that?
The site is not live yet. We've been given a link to go in and look at it as if it were live from a staff perspective and the steering committee of that committee looking at it. And then once we're happy with that, there will be, it'll go live, and then we'll start connecting people to it by having them either sign up or through email blasts or other ways that each town talks with the public. So we're going to do our best to get in touch with anybody and everybody who would have anything, at least a business on there, but beyond that, just the general public, so you can use it and know what's going on.
Ready for Mike?
Yeah, sorry, I just wasn't sure if anybody else was talking. So as Patrice said, we finished up the final inspections for 7 Loomis. We worked on some of the regulation reviews. Things have been kind of quiet from a complaint standpoint and permitting, which is not unexpected this time of year. It sort of feels like we've had a lot of, I don't know, pre-app meetings or just sort of meetings with property owners and people interested in parcels of land that are for sale and contemplating purchasing commercial pieces and sort of doing a lot of tire kicking. So we've spent a lot of time meeting with people, what seems to be about the same couple of pieces of land. So it's a bit of a rinse repeat. So other than that, it's been pretty quiet.
Which begs the question, which pieces of land? Just out of curiosity.
Fort Holland Road is a big one.
Yeah.
The oil company that's there now.
And where's the large parcel that we've met on five times?
West and it's Tedford's property off of West Street. It's like 50 acres, 30 acres.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah. But it's all not been for subdivision purposes. It's people who are looking to just one giant lot kind of thing.
Is that in the neighborhood business zone? Or is it residential?
No, it's residential.
Residential.
Patrice, the one on Fort Holland Road, is that residential or is that commercial or is that connected to be both?
It's RMUZ. Residential is not allowed there. So it's somebody, you know, the guy who was in there had the office in the house structure and kept all his trucks and equipment and whatever in the barns. And it's people who are looking at it for things like that. We've had a couple of questions about outdoor storage, which is not allowed in that zone. We'll allow a pickup truck with a sign on it, but you know, not a dump truck, not trailers, not equipment, not bins of stuff. So things like that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, thank you.
Yep.
Okay. I don't see anything under old business. And I don't see anything in a new business.
Correct.
We have ongoing discussion on the Bolton subdivision regulations.
And for the board clerk and everybody else, if you want, I can pull these up on the screen. Would that be the easiest way to do this?
You gave us this copy, so.
Well, we have paper, but the people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for them, yes. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Is that big enough?
Yes.
Okay. So just to, as an introductory to this, the red corrections that you were looking at in the regulations were things that were done during codification review. So they sent us a list of things, staff responded, and then they made the corrections in the document. Some of this is also a lot of grammatical things, so you'll see a lot of that. Some of it is editor's notes, that sort of thing. So just for example, here they've just added authority effective date. So they would have sent us something saying, we want to add this, is that okay? We check the okay box and then they would add it. Same thing with, you know, now everything is the Bolton Planning and Zoning Commission. It did say just Planning Commission prior. So things like that. The stuff that's in red, unless you have some comments or questions on that, are things that I think are just general in nature and needed to be corrected. Then there was some things in blue. There were some handwritten notes that I had put on there. And those are the things I think, you know, that we should discuss. The goal is to try and get through this tonight if we can. The town engineer is going to be looking at about, I think it's about 15 pages of this, which is really out of our bailiwick. If I want him to look at that, whatever the language is what it should be based on his engineering review. So I don't know how you want to tackle this. I don't know if people want to ask questions first, or do you just want me to go through page by page?
I have a question.
Yes.
What does the underline in red mean?
I think it's just part of how they effectively show it.
Okay.
Because everything in red, I think, is underlined.
Yeah, it's part of the tracked changes function in like Microsoft Word.
Right. Thanks.
There's one line that isn't in red, but it is underlined. So I thought that there was a difference.
Where can you tell me where that is?
On the purpose, 410.1.2 purpose. In the middle, and sewage disposal, so that proposed streets shall be in harmony with existing or officially, and then...
That's a scenario down to the formatting.
Yeah.
Follows down to the formatting.
All right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's just showing you where the format is. It's a little confusing. The one I have on screen doesn't show you all the formatting stuff that's on the sidelines that you have.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Is there any other questions before we go through it?
No. Okay, so. The date. We'll fill in the date after the public hearing.
Yeah, I presume the revised regulation date would be effective when we adopt.
Okay.
And you've
circled that. Okay.
Yeah. So that would be, if we're looking here, I don't know if Linda, are you following along on what I sent you or on this?
I'm following along on what you're sharing on the screen.
Okay, so that's item B right here. I do you need me to point these out as we go along then?
No, I'm good.
Okay, all right. Well, just let me know if you do.
Okay.
So on the second sheet, sorry.
We just want to go to the blue ink then.
Yeah, I mean, I only had a question on this page about the definitions and how they're set up and why they're set up differently from the zoning regulations. There may be a reason for that. I just haven't gotten an answer to that.
So I have a question in the flood base. Flooding having a 1% chance of being equaled or exceeded in any given year. This is all based on the FEMA flood rate map?
Yes, these are all FEMA definitions.
Okay. Because I when I read it, I understood the 100-year flood was, but I wasn't sure the flood having a 1% chance was also on the FEMA flood rate map.
It's also the 100-year flood. The 1%
is also called the 100-year.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
And the other question I had on this page, for example, under the buildable area, I'm just wondering if she can make any time that we reference a zoning regulation 45310 here, if she can make this a live link. So when you're on the website and you click on that, it takes you to this actual zoning regulation so you can see what the in accordance is. Okay, so moving on to page 3.
I have a question about the open space, all the things you listed. Did we miss anything? Is this all that I'm not up on open space and what it's. Did we list everything that should be listed? We have everything on there?
This is what's in the current regulations.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be adding something where there isn't something.
So this was open space that was added when you did a regulation change in 2009, apparently.
Yeah.
Is there something that you see that's missing?
No, I just didn't know because I'm not up on all this. I feel like I'm behind I just didn't know if there was something you were aware of that should be listed that wasn't listed. That was my only question. And if you think it's adequate and sufficient, we didn't miss anything, then that's great.
You know, I think it's adequate. This is just a definition, so.
Okay.
Therese, on your, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Okay, Patrice, on your previous question about the live link, when it comes to citing the general statutes, in my opinion, I think that should be a hyperlink, and you can do hyperlinks in both Microsoft Word as well as a PDF.
Right. I'm just wondering if codification will do that. I was sort of under the understanding that they would. The reason it might not be live here is because we're not, at the time that she sent me these, I don't think we had the zoning regulations up online yet. So that's my answer to that, but I'm going to ask to be sure because I think it's important.
I think it makes things easier from a usability standpoint. It just makes sense if it is possible.
Yep. So that's the zoning regulation here in Plan of Conservation and Development. We cite Connecticut General Statute. I'm going to ask the same question about the statutes if they can do the same thing there.
In my experience, they'll link within sections and within documents in the e-code platform, but I don't think they'll link to CGS because when the hyperlinks, when they update the statutes and stuff, I think the links may change.
Okay. And
so, you know, two codes per town times 169 towns, I think they'd need a full-time webmaster to just update hyperlinks, but I've never asked. I don't think I've seen in any of the codes that I've used that they've done.
Okay.
But there's nothing to say that Bolton can't be unique.
No, we are. All right. So it is a question. So we'll see what the answer is when we get the answer. Okay, so going back to page, I had nothing else on page 3. I don't know if anybody else, again, these are mostly just definitions on this page. When we get to page 4, I just had a question.
I think the definition of the plan of conservation and development is terrible. That's not a definition of what it is. Do you think, or am I wrong?
I don't think it's meant to be what a plan of conservation and development is as much as it's meant to be a reference when it's referred to later on in the document. And it says, you know, you have to abide by the plan of conservation development. So you go to the definition and what they mean is the latest revision to the town's plan. I think that's what it means. And it's in accordance with this section, which governs plan of conservation and development.
Okay.
again, this is your current definition outside of removing that piece that she's got removed there.
Okay.
I don't think it's meant to define what a plan of the definition of a plan of conservation development, what's in it is governed by the statute.
Right. Okay.
All right, and moving to page 4, this is the only question I had here was why the word the is in here, conformity with plan of conservation development or the plan of conservation development. So
I think the article belongs there.
Okay. All right. I mean, the rest of the, some of the changes like from planning agencies to councils of government that was made during the codification review. Because that's what they're called. Moving on to page 5.
On 410-3.9 solar energy techniques. I just saw a blurb today about some presentation on the latest in energy efficiency and sustainability and for specifically for planning and zoning regulations. I think I deleted it, but I can probably get it back.
Okay.
And I'll send it to you and we'll see if that's worth anything.
Okay.
Because that is a very hot topic right now.
Yep. I'm just making a note. Okay. I don't know if there's any other questions on this page. And if we move on to page 6, I did have some, again, the, where it says here, Bolton zoning regulations, I actually found the section. I think the section number should be included here, again, with a hyperlink. So that would be section 450-7.1. Same thing with down on 410-4-3. The section reference, it's actually, I've got with dimensional section in capitals because that's actually what it's called of the zoning regulations and it's article 11. On page 7, I clarified that the fund they have listed in item B, where it says the town's open space preservation, acquisition, and conservation fund. I don't know if that is a term somewhere that's been used, but the town of Bolton calls it the open space fund. So that should read the town's open space fund, period. Unless there is a statutory requirement that it's called something else, but that's where they deposit that money. This is all for fee in lieu of open space and how things get appraised. This runs basically by statute. Statute outlines these steps. And then if we move on to page 8, in section 4.6, again, another live reference here, 450-7.1E, Bolton Zoning Regulations. And down at the bottom of the page, Mike and I, we're both trying to figure out with a formal what here. We think it's probably means a formal plan submission for submission with a formal plan, but something got cut off or actually it didn't. Cause if you look at the zoning regulations that or the subdivision regulations currently, that's what it says. So I think just if we eliminate after put a period after submission and leave it at that, I think it would take care of the question. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay. On page 9,
Okay, you say application form.
Right. So if you look up at this, if you look up at the screen, this is what we came up with. So application for approval of a subdivision shall be made to the commission in accordance with procedures prescribed by the commission. So that way, if we change them again, it's whatever is prescribed. And currently it's not on forms and checklists. It's actually in, you go into the computer, you set yourself up a an account, and that's how you make your application.
So I think that's about this.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I think someone else was trying to speak.
No, that's okay. Go ahead, Kron.
So number one, I don't know if there are any statutory requirements. If someone wants to come in and perform this process in person, I don't know if that's something we still have to allow. Even if not, if there is a person for whatever reason that doesn't have access to a computer, internet, whatever reason, computer, illiteracy, somebody that's older that may not be comfortable with that online process, still having to allow them the ability to come in and perform that action in person, I think would be a good, to keep that, maybe add something along the effects, for more expedited service, would be preferred to perform this activity online, or we can still take submissions in person.
So in answer to that, Kwan, we do that. So when somebody calls, first of all, typically a subdivision, it's going to be an engineer or somebody. You need to involve some personnel in this that is a professional person who would know how to do this or is doing this online anyway. But in the case where maybe you have a homeowner who's trying to do some of the footwork on their own, we will tell them that you can either do it on your own from your own home computer, create the account and go in and upload and do what you have to do. Or if you need help or want help, you can come into the office when the land use office is open and we will help you do it. We have a computer, a standalone that's there, and one of us can be there to help somebody upload information. We do that with all applications, subdivision, zoning, building, whatever it is, just in case somebody isn't comfortable, like you said, or doesn't have the means to do it online. So we do provide that service. And I would assume that that service would fall under in accordance with the procedures prescribed by the commission, because it's part of what we do.
After prescribed by the commission, would you like to put something that says click here for online application?
If we can do a live link, I suppose. I mean, Mike, how would that work? Would that work okay into going into Viewpoint?
So the way that they set it up, I think that they're going to only want to link to things within their system. You can set up and upload what they refer to as public documents, which can then be associated with codes that are there. I mean, in theory, you can add notes and all kinds of other stuff, but they put this into E-code with the ability to link to these sections, to embed the sections in websites, and to also allow people to download something so they can come in, they can click download on a section, and it's going to download it into a Word document. So I think for that reason, to keep the that ability, they're probably going to prefer to use the public docs function.
Plus, if you're absolutely looking at these online, let's just say, for example, if you just back out the subdivision application, stuff is right there online that you can click into. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm a little less concerned about the subdivision stuff because it you are going to have a professional working on this, at least an engineer, to draw up the plan. So
I mean, I can show you if you want. I can share what we have in Ashford and how I put documents related to it, if the commission's interested. But
I'm satisfied.
Thank you.
Moving on here, Mike and I discussed the State Highway Department permit today, and I think I had a might have had a question mark. Oh no, I didn't. Mm-hmm. This is not really possible to do. The applicant can't really apply for a permit in connection with the DOT. They won't take it without an approval from the town first. The town can ask the state for comments on a driveway cut or a road cut, and they might give them to us, but they're not going to give a final report or submit anything final until the town has agreed that the subdivision is going to go in. That's why
do you have to take this out?
Yeah, I think I would just take the entire paragraph out. If we have to preserve the numbering for some reason, then we might put something short in there that, you know, the State Highway Department permit may be needed in cases where a subdivision comes into a state road or something like that. We can make something short and sweet if we have to keep the numbering. But that's probably the extent of what I would say.
What if you put in there that if they need it, they have to go through you? I mean,
oh, they don't have to go through us. They would actually go to the state.
Oh, I thought you said only the town.
They need the town approval first.
Oh, got it.
I think, I mean, Patrice, the other thing we could do is just have them list that section as reserved. So if something gets added down the road, if we make an amendment, we don't have to modify the whole.
Right. Okay. I didn't make any note here, but I just want to ask this of the commission. We have a notice to neighboring property owners within 500 feet. Do you wish to keep that perimeter?
Have you seen any reason to change it?
Well, normally it's abutting landowners.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always include somebody that's 500 feet away. I'm not sure in all cases, somebody who's 500 feet away, whose land does not touch the actual piece, that they are actually aggrieved in a case if they come in to try and, you know, sue a decision or something like that. But
I think it adds to the transparency of what's going on by informing, that's what we've had.
I agree.
I think we should leave.
I would rather have more people know what's going on than just have it be abutters.
Especially we don't have any newspapers anymore that are going to write it.
Newspapers. No, but you are posting a sign.
Used to be in the newspaper.
Yeah. I would just leave it. Alone.
You don't have articles written, but there is a legal notice that would go into the newspaper. Yeah,
but there's so little local news. I think most people are buying the newspapers.
Well, I felt obligated to ask, so.
Oh, no. Good question.
Thank you.
I would say leave it.
All right. Moving on to page 10. We get down into the required submittal items because we kind of do this all differently now. We don't ask for 14 copies. We have been sort of basically kind of guessing because everything is online. So I've changed it instead of 14 to say up to 14 copies could be, shall be accompanied by up to. So it would be a decision based on, you know, what the project is and what we're doing. But I think in general, if we had, you know, two sets of plans, one on each side of the table when you're looking at them, and those plans could be used if people wanted to come in and look at them and didn't want to look at them online, that would be enough. I'm just, you know, it gets to be a lot of tree killing if you're asking for that many copies of stuff.
I think up to 14 is good.
Okay. And the word approvals, I believe, has been changed to or reports from, because I think the Inland Wetlands Commission actually is supposed to issue a report to the Planning and Zoning Commission. So the first sentence would be, in addition to the above items, the applicant may be requested to provide up to 14 copies of any subdivision application accompanied by blah, blah, blah. So that's how we'll change that. Moving on to page 11. Again, with all the digital stuff here in submission of applications for 10.6.9, complete subdivision application fee and all of that to the land use department. It says here at least 10 days prior to. I'm going to leave that in there. It's not necessarily a rule, but there are some times where if somebody really wants comments back and whatever, we really need to have plans in advance that long because of depending on what it is. So just I'm making a note that that's still there. Doesn't say shall.
Is that shall? That's good. The town hall's open.
Sorry?
Is that calendar days or is it the business days?
10 days. Whatever 10 days.
Calendar, I would say.
Calendar.
It just gives us the ability to ask for things and give us a little more time if we need it.
Well, sometimes you get around Christmas and New Year's, and then all of a sudden you will think you got 10 days, and town hall's closed Friday, and basically you're down to 3 or 4 days instead of 10.
Right. Moving down under final approval, did I go too far? Yes. Final approval here, 7.3. Looking at this, I don't think we asked for title insurance policies. For final approval, we would have required deeds and easements. Consider a construction of required public facilities or bonds. I don't know if we asked for title insurance policies. Anybody have any insight there?
I don't think the town's taken on any liability with title insurance. I mean, you got a surveyor, an engineer, right? I don't think you need it, but. It's not like a mortgage.
Right. I'm going to remove that if that's not okay. Down onto page 12. That'd be down on the bottom under endorsement. We change this around. The blue on the screen is the change, 410.7. Instead of 5 complete sets of plans, again, we need one set of paper, one Mylar, and then they upload it into their application so it's online. So we've asked for a complete set of plans, including the approved subdivision plan, site development plan, construction plan, associated stuff, submitted to the land use staff, as follows: one Mylar set of plans suitable for filing in the town clerk's office. So whatever the town clerk's office requires is what they would be required to submit. And one paper set of plans for the town files. And that's it. We also then ask for one set of plans shall be in digital format prescribed by the commission. That would be the upload into their application. I do tend to say to a and I don't even know if we haven't had a subdivision in so long, but I do tend to say to an applicant, if you want a copy for your own that's signed, we'll be happy to do that for you if you want to give us an extra set or whatever. But that actually hasn't happened that they want them in paper in a while. So they have construction drawings on site, so they don't need them for that. It's just really for the town files. Moving on to page 13. again, change the language so that it's whatever the town took out the, what did I do here? I don't know what I did here. Including the cover sheet. So that didn't get put in here. So this is the signature block and where the signature block needs to be. So this should say, yeah, I'm just going to type it in here now. All right. So that's just finishing what they need to give us. But basically, it's a signature on each sheet by the chairman. And if the chairman's not available, the secretary, you sign all the sheets get filed. Again, down in the description and requirements in 8.1, we have, again, 14 paper copies. I have up to 14 paper copies could be required. I've five copies of the final subdivision, no, copies of the final subdivision plan shall be provided in accordance with 410.77. So that refers back to the section we just discussed, so that if that section changes, this changes too, instead of writing it all out again. Are trying to save a little space where we can.
I have a question on 4107.7D.
4107.7.
It's on page 13. On page 13, it says the construction of all public facilities in connection with the subdivision shall be completed within 5 years after the approval of a plan for such subdivision. Was there something about that recently in a state statute?
There was a couple of acts passed in the 21 legislative session, which extended the expiration date of land use permits, but it was largely for approved but not yet expired projects during that 2020 to 2023 timeframe.
Okay. Thank you.
I think it's Public Act 21-163, but don't quote me on it.
Sounds good to me.
All right, page 14. I wanted to add under 7, it says here the names of adjoining owners. I think it's important to add the addresses because a lot of times the name is great, but if it's a surrounding area, it's nice to know what that address is. It's not always what you think it should be. And then it saves us from going to locate, trying to figure it out if we have to. So I added that on 16. I have existing and proposed street names and monuments should be shown. So I've changed that around. That's it on 14. On page 15. In the scale map, which is a little 500-foot map, usually up in the right corner, we ask that they show existing and proposed lot lines because sometimes it's just easier to see in that scale. And here down in site development plan is some more changes with regard to, again, up to 14 paper copies. One paper copy of the format, blah, blah, blah. So all the, in the one digital copy. So again, changing all the requirements for the plan. The information to be included in 410.9.2 is basically starting to add, some of the stuff is for the town engineer to review. I mean, I've looked at it. This is all stuff that we asked for. I just want to make sure that in town engineering land that this all makes sense still. To what he looks for when he's reviewing a plan. And that goes on to page 16. I don't know if any of you looked at this and had any questions about any of it, but these are all things I would have Joe review. On page 17, I think at the end here or somewhere in this list, we need to add that they give us a proposed street name and proposed house numbers, and they can get the house numbers for us. They can get the street name approved through us, but there's no real process right now for that. So we're usually scrambling at the end. I presume they should just give us a list of street names and we can check it with the public works department to make sure it's not too close to something else and doesn't conflict with something. And then the house numbers are usually assigned somewhere between me and the assessor. And they can put all those on plans too, but that nowhere is that asked for, and it probably should be on there.
Well, you've already said under 16, existing and proposed street names and street monuments. You want to just add that to 16 with the addresses?
Right. What letter was that again?
It's B16 on page 14.
Oh, it's on page 14. Okay. So existing street names for, and just add house numbers, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Patrice?
Yes.
Does the post office have some say in this, naming of the streets and the numbers? I seem to recall at one point they did.
They just want to know if we're creating a street, where the street is and what it's called.
Oh, so they don't have any, they really don't have any say. Okay. I thought years ago that you used to want to know the names of the streets so there wouldn't be problems. So if you had, you know, spelled the names closely the same, if they're two words sounded the same,
We usually send them something that says the street is a new street and where it's located so that they have an idea for that. They don't typically get involved with the naming, though, that I know of.
Do we still have something that says we can't use family names or something for our streets? Or was that just a temporary thing?
I have no idea.
Okay.
We haven't actually, since I've been here, we've not created a new street. So I don't know. I don't know if it's an ordinance or some kind of policy.
An awful lot of streets in town named after families.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Don't know who the family is.
All right. I can check it though, Marilee. I mean, it's a great question. I have no idea what the naming policy is.
I thought there's one, and it might have just been a temporary one, and it may just been a thought that flew out there. But this was eons ago, where they said, "Let's not have so many family names."
Okay.
The last one I remember was Hanover Farms. That was what the development was sold as, Hanover Farms. But the whoever the developer was wanted to call it Alvord Road, which was a Bolton family, ancient Bolton family. But all the residents protested. No, we want to call it Hanover Farms. I think that went to the selectmen.
So back to 17 here. These are really Joe questions, whether this is what he's looking at when he's reviewing plans, if anything needs to change or any chapter sections need to change. The stuff that has been changed, for example, on page 20, there was going back here on page 19, guide rail was separated into two words, and I believe that was done asking Joe. If you go on to page 20, there was a section about clear runout area. I know he was asked about that when they were doing the codification. That's under item O. Sorry, I haven't gotten there yet.
Isn't that like for big trucks?
Yeah, but I mean, he was asked for the he was asked to look at
available for safe use by an errant vehicle.
Yeah.
We don't have any of those.
We have no errant vehicles.
I mean, well, mobile station, one spot. There's no clear run out there.
So some of this, he was asked some general questions about. He did not review the whole thing. So basically going through page 20, 21, 22, 23, I don't know if there's anything anybody had any questions about that you want to look at on any of these, but.
So you know how the big thing now is like street diets and smart street planning? There's nothing mentioned about any of that in here. We need to, like we suggest open space design, should we ask for a smart street or a road diet, or is that like not the time and place in this?
Well, it's an interesting question because we don't require sidewalks because nobody wants to shovel them or take care of them, and I believe that's still the same, so we don't have any of that. We don't require bike lanes. I mean, these are, I would assume, mostly, you know, shorter streets. You very well could have a property, though, that has a street that runs from one end of the property through to another street on the other end of the property. I think you can certainly have those conversations with somebody developing a street when we do that. But we don't really have any kind of bicycle plan or anything that would talk to any of those. I think it would be a case-by-case basis kind of thing. And on a subdivision street that's 50-foot right-of-way and you're just doing two lanes and I don't know.
I mean, I'm all for starting more pedestrian-friendly roads. I mean, sometimes I take my grandkids out and I feel like I'm putting their life in, you know, danger.
So I think it's something we would have to talk to the selectmen about and public works, because I don't know what the investment turns into for the town. And I think you'd need to have a public hearing on that. Anytime sidewalk is met, we're not even calling the trail that's running up Bolton Center Road a sidewalk. It's a trail. It's a gravel path. It's anything you want to call it except a sidewalk, because it's like a dirty word in this town. So, I don't know if that has changed, but I do know that it comes with maintenance costs to the town, and that's one of the reasons we don't have them. And I've always been told that if people want to walk, they can go on the numerous trails that we have in town. So unless there's been some sort of change and you want to talk to the selectmen about it, we can do that. But I think that would be I wouldn't want to hang these up on a public hearing, because people are going to fight about whether we have something that looks like a sidewalk and we don't call it a sidewalk in town in the regs.
Okay, we can always amend them.
Yep.
I just know on my street right now, which is fairly long, fairly straight, fairly wide. Yep. School Road, that part of School Road between West Street and Hebron Road, we've got a lot of families walking down there now, and they're walking three and four abreast and dogs and every other thing. And
there's a lot of people out walking now.
It's just dangerous.
A lot of four-year-olds riding bikes with two wheels, and the parents are looking at their phone too. You know, there's not a sidewalk in the world that you just got to know.
I would just add that the easiest thing to do to slow cars down is to make the roads narrower. But the first, and no disrespect to anybody in this community, but the first thing that people are going to get mad about is public safety and school buses and fire trucks and the whole nine yards. Though I don't see the fire trucks in Hartford having any trouble getting around. So I think if you really felt passionate about doing this now, you might be able to easily build in some language that basically allows the commission to give some credit to developers constructing new streets by just saying, you know, when circumstances are appropriate, we may allow for reduced lane widths or something, just to notate it. But I think you need to talk to public safety and a whole bunch of other people before you codify anything stronger than that, because people get really nervous about what that means for public safety. But
well, and then when you narrow the streets, then there's no place to walk except on the grass on the side too. So well, you get
even
that.
Just painting and striping them so that
yes.
the area on the, I mean, we can't even, no offense, our old road crew, they work very hard, but why, when we redo a road and paint it, can't we take care of it then? I mean, that white line on the side makes a big difference.
The fog line, that's what it's called.
Anyway, I wouldn't mind something in there that you suggested, Mike. I think that's a, if you could do it in such a way where it's not going to.
410-115B, you could add some language about a waiver.
So let's see if we put speed tables in.
410-11, which?
410-11.5B is where we call the minimum pavement width for local streets shall be 26 feet between gutter lines. You might add language about a waiver.
For a narrow street. Okay. All right.
And before we quickly move off of that, just maybe a suggestion from Mike, the exploration of possibly looking at speed bumps and speed humps, which are designed to slow vehicles down, but not slow them down to the point where if there's an emergency, for example, the emergency response vehicle could, you know, obviously still get to its intended destination. Just as a side note.
I had a conversation with our new road foreman about speed bumps and things to slow people down on Steele's Crossing where the crosswalk is. And his experience with speed bumps has not, I guess when he worked for Marlboro, they had speed bumps in places. He said it, the road deterioration is horrific because the plows hit it in the way it does different things. Wasn't his traffic calming answer, wasn't his first choice. Rumble strips, I guess, didn't work too well either in terms of road longevity.
Oh, really? Really?
Neighbors don't usually like rumble strips. They're loud.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking in exactly that location that you talked about on Steele's Crossing Road. If you had a rumble strip that went across the road.
Right, like a toll, at least, like you come into the toll booth.
Yeah, at least someone who wasn't paying attention, oh, what's going on? You know, yeah. and you slow down a little bit.
Maybe. Yeah, and there aren't that many houses there.
And there's not that many houses there.
Yeah.
You know, the speed tables are elongated, so they're not a bump. They go for
because I was wondering if I was the only one who didn't know what you were talking about.
Yeah, no, they have them all over West Hartford where it's a smooth transition going over, but you got to slow down, otherwise it'll put you into the ceiling. But as far as a plow going over,
except the voice,
it's like they're going up a little hill and over again. So
okay,
that was also part of my I didn't want to go too obviously technical about it. There's a difference between a speed bump and a speed hump in terms of how it's constructed and its actual overall width and the incline and decline of the actual surface itself. But, you know,
right,
that's outside the scope of, I guess, what we're just considerations. I know our neighbors in Manchester, there are a few streets that have speed humps, and they seem to last well even with, you know, through the winter season with plows clearing those roads.
Potholes.
That'll slow them down.
Indeed.
You know, for that area, if they want, instead of putting that, they could just put those signs in that when people, before they cross, they push the button.
Yeah.
They're talking about doing that at that particular location.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to work better than a speed bump. At least it's costing someone. I mean, we have speed bumps at our street on the lake, and by the time people aren't paying attention, they're looking somewhere else, they go over the speed bump, it's too late.
Yeah.
You know, they're already in the area that they're not supposed to be going, so they actually have taken them out of there because they just didn't work, because we have a beach area, and people would, you know, the kids would leave the beach, and cars were driving down the road real fast, and it didn't make a difference.
It's too wide of the road.
Any other comments in that, on those areas that we're going to have Joe? I've made some notes. I'll have him look. I think we're on page 27. Let's get through here. 27, 28. These are all roadway drainage and things that he would review as an engineer.
Patrice, I had a cul-de-sac question.
Yeah.
Did we come up with the 20, or is that a state? Did we come up with 20 houses in a cul-de-sac talking to the fire department? Is that how we came up with it?
I think that was the concern. They didn't want more houses than that in a place where there was limited access and be difficult for them to get in and out and people.
So that was a number that we came up with.
I think so.
Yeah, it varies from town to town. Some towns it's 12, some towns it's 18, some towns it goes by length. 1,200 feet is the longest cul-de-sac. It is usually based on school bus service, fire department, and emergency response, because in a cul-de-sac, if they have to close the road, they need it to be a certain things about it. So that's usually where that comes from. Were you thinking of making it shorter or longer, or are you just wondering?
I was part of it is to refresh my memory, and part of it was to ask if the number we had come up with was close to or in keeping with what other places, other towns do.
Sounds like they're all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of them are different, but it's, they're all within, I would say, probably five lots.
Okay. Well, one of the issues is that our regulations say that we're supposed to have a connected series of streets.
Right.
And when High Ridge Farm went in, they proposed connected streets, and so everybody was up in arms. No, it all has to be on cul-de-sac. We don't want any through.
Well, the neighbors came in.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And the adjacent development said, no, we don't want a connected series of streets.
Right.
The kids will come flying down here from the high school. And so there's a disconnect between what people are willing to stand and what the ideal street pattern is.
They like their cul-de-sacs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They do. It does create issues, like for plowing even. That's why you do create for plowing and emergency services, it does create issues. That's why through streets are usually looked at, or you allow for a temporary cul-de-sac so that the street can someday go through, which also creates issues. If you go down to the bottom of page 32, there was a correction there. I'm going to get there in a second, 31, 32, which talks about the current sewage disposal system. So under B, this one starts with, as of 2008, the town of Bolton has no public sewer system and most sewage is treated by private, blah, blah, blah. So we have changed that to read, as of 2024, the town of Bolton has limited public sewer service for pollution avoidance purposes and not intended to allow for higher density residential purposes. And most sewage is treated by private on-site subsurface sewage disposal systems, period.
I would like to scratch the part about and not intended to allow for higher density residential purposes, since that's one of the things we're trying to get changed.
True, yeah. But... until it's changed, I think that's what you should say. And that's to change that, it's going to be after the end of next fiscal year, and it's going to have to be a policy change that three towns agree on at the Water Pollution Control Authority level. But my suggestion would be once they change it, then you could change this whole sentence, okay, this whole paragraph, that it would, you know, maybe it's then put in to encourage density in those areas. So I'm just stating what it is now. And I talked to Jim, who is the WPCA representative, and he thought that that was appropriate for what it is now.
Okay.
So page 33. On page 33, and I've got there is a section 13.4, which talks about the water supply for fire protection. This mimics the fire protection requirements in the zoning regulations in a certain section. I believe it is chapter 450, article 3, part 3, water supply for fire protection. So what I'm proposing to do here is under this section, just say this section, wait a minute. So basically refer to chapter 450, article 3, for water supply and fire protection is controlled under the zoning regulations, chapter 450, article 3, part 3, water supply for fire protection, in accordance with that. And then I would take everything out except for the waiver provision, which is item number 4. It's near the very end, which says the requirements for actual construction of the permanent water supply may be waived with the following requirements. Suggesting leaving that in because that is not in the zoning regulations for this, because this is directly related to subdivision. And I think you should still keep the waiver in there for purposes of fire protection. The rest of it is identical to the zoning regulations. So basically taking everything but the waiver out and then just putting a beginning sentence that says to refer to the zoning regulation for water supply and fire protection. Again, just trying to keep it consistent. So one change is we want to make sure that it's all the same. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Would you refer to the Eastern Highlands Health District rather than the town sanitarium? I don't know.
Yeah, so I asked that question and I was told that the town sanitarium is appropriate language in case for some reason we change health districts or something else happens. Yeah. It is the town sanitarium that is, or a town sanitarium, much like we refer to a town engineer, even though he's not our right. actual town engineer. So yeah, I was told to leave that. That was okay. Let's see, getting into page 36. Which is erosion and sedimentation control. This is fairly standard language, which I believe was reviewed by Joe already. And I didn't really see anything in here that wasn't what we do now. I don't know if there's any questions on that. The only other thing, okay. So, on page 40, where we talk about guarantee for maintenance of public improvements, this is bonding and what have you. It's 410.15.2. Under item A, we discuss the commission shall accept cash, bonds, passbook, or statement savings account and other financial guarantees other than surety bonds, which is correct. However, the sentence after that says the commission shall accept. Where did I see that? as a condition. Oh, no, this is different. 5.2, that's why. Sorry. There we go. So here it's got two different things. We do not accept surety bonds. So all I did was take out that the commission may accept a surety bond. So the commission may accept or shall accept cash bond, passbook, and statement savings account and other financial guarantees other than surety bonds. That's how it should read. And that is, that matches statute. It matches what we do. On page 41, I had a question about interest and I got that question answered, which is we don't, even in a cash account or whatever we take, they don't go into an interest bearing account. So we don't return interest because we don't earn any interest.
So are you just going to take that whole sentence out?
I don't know if I'm going to take it out or if I'm going to leave it in and say something like, you know, if interest is accrued, it shall be returned to the applicant. I think that's what it should say.
Okay.
Do most towns have interest, put them in interest-bearing accounts?
I have no idea. And I would bet it's up to the finance department. Our finance department doesn't do it that way. Because I just had this conversation with her on last week. I actually thought that they had to put them into an interest account. She said they did not, and that's how they do it.
Runs it off.
Mine too.
I had a question on page 43, which is requirements for street trees and plantings. And I just want somebody to explain to me why we should require side and rear yard trees. I understand street trees in the front yard, and a lot of towns do that, and it actually makes a subdivision look good, and you get credit for trees that are either there already, or if you're planting, you know, like an island or something, trees get credited. But we've had a couple cases of subdivision where trees were planted on the side. And then when the people moved in, a tree was cut down for some reason, they wanted to put a shed in or something. There's no way to guarantee those trees stay. And I'm not sure what we're trying to solve with that.
I agree with you. I don't see the need for side yard trees or rear yard trees. Want to plant them? Go ahead and plant them.
Unless it was used for delineation of property line, but
yeah, I think it was a Jeff thing.
Could have been.
Although that would be an issue because then it creates a problem when the tree has to be, you know, trimmed or something. Then it's an argument between the two property owners of whose tree it is and who has to pay for it and all that.
What happens if you kill my tree when you trim it because it's a new tree? Yeah. I could write a book on it, but I just get
to I think it would be okay to take that sentence out.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to put something in that just says the commission encourages, you know, preservation of existing trees and vegetation that are on the site as opposed to clear cutting, I think we could put something in like that. But I think the requirement.
Well, that's what it says. That's what two says. It says,
well, then it says one shade tree per 50 linear feet of property shall be provided.
What I was talking about was taking about that sentence.
Oh, okay.
It bracketed. If you take that sentence out, leave the rest.
Okay.
One shade tree?
Yeah.
Take that one out?
Yeah, take that sentence out.
Okay. And then we get down to the bottom of page 43, and we're back to Joe looking at construction and authorization and inspections.
I did have a question.
Yep.
We asked for a landscape architect to prepare a landscape plan. Why don't you ask for a landscape architect to work in conjunction with siting your subdivision? That's what they're better at. You're better at a Jim Cropley or somebody who works with planting design your planting plan, and you're better off having your landscape architect site your subdivision. So, I mean, to me, it looks like we're asking for the professional in the wrong place. That's
well,
just my
opinion. No offense to Jim Cropley, but there's no requirement for a landscape architect, and there is a requirement for an engineer to certify the engineering drawings.
Right, but I'm saying you may require a landscape architect to prepare landscape plans developed in accordance with these regulations. Seems like we're asking for the landscape architect in the wrong part of our subdivision, in my opinion.
Where can you tell me what section you're in, please?
410.16.4. Okay. Preparation of plans.
Yep.
Can you move the screen up?
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Jim. I'm not keeping up. I apologize. Here we go. So the commission may require that a landscape architect prepare the landscape plans developed in accordance with these regulations.
Right. But we don't ask for them, or we don't ask for them in the siting of the subdivision. I'm just, should we, if we ask for them here, we should ask for them there.
What section do you think that would be?
Well, this is under the landscaping plan.
I know, but so, I think yes. I understand. But a landscape architect does more than just make a planting plan. Most of them hand the planting plan. I mean, most of them cite the whole darn thing, the streets, the roads. They work with engineers. They don't just plant trees. So it would be way back in the beginning when you have your engineers and your surveyors.
Oh, so 410-10.1.
Is that what page is that?
Page 17, instruction documents, Article 10.
Page 17?
Yeah, why don't you take a look at that section and propose language and send it to
me?
Patrice.
Yeah. Where is it? Plans provided under transmission documents prepared by an engineer licensed to practice in two. No, because you need your...
Right, and put that sentence in there.
I think you should go in there. I just think that we...
That's the more, because that's the most general.
Okay.
So which section are you talking?
410-10.
410-10.1.
Would that be a language of May? Or is it going to be required?
No, I think it's a may. I don't think it needs to be required because you still have to have the engineer sign off on the landscape architect's plans. Right, Tom? They still haven't become.
Right, because it's part of the whole, right. Part of the whole set, yeah.
Right. So right, so this is talking about construction documents. So are you counting a landscaping plan as a construction document? This is more like roads, drainage, utilities, sidewalks, curbs, gutters, bridges.
Well, site work happens.
I think that was Arlene's point, is that it would be a good idea for a landscape architect to be involved in all that.
Not just the planting.
Not just the planting.
Is your office worth?
So I've suggested to Arlene that she give you some language and then you can think about
here.
It.
Description and requirements. Try 410.8.1. Okay. Subdivision plan shall be prepared, sealed, and signed by surveyor licensed in practice. Oh, that doesn't get into that's not.
This is Jim Crombie. I think it should stay where it is. I think we should remove the requirement because I don't know how many houses we've gone to. The builder throws in these stupid trees and they never mature to anything. And if they do, they're out in the road and the town's got to cut them down after years. So, I mean, I can see having a few of those, but all those trees, I think it's a waste.
So you're talking mostly about design, right?
Let me suggest something here. I think landscaping plans are more important when you're talking about a business construction or something that's not a residential construction. I think people who are buying a home in a house or a house lot to build a home, I think they should be able to landscape their lot the way they want, whether they use, you know, I don't think they should have to buy it pre-landscaped unless they want to, outside of the street trees. You know,
fire the street trees. Because, what? You know, you go to the house, you look at the street trees that they're planting. And what do? They have these people buy this beautiful house, have this beautiful window. And you look out, and what do? They plant a tree there. So this gorgeous home, in 5 years, you can't even see the beautiful. They can't look out and see anything out of their window. And if they plant them further on the street, we did a subdivision in Coventry 10 years ago. The town's in there now cutting the trees to anything, and that was their requirement. We planted them, and they're just too close to the road. I don't know. I think we should actually remove that requirement.
Well, street trees.
Street trees. I think if we're saying that the homeowner should be required to plant trees, not the I've not been in a development that I've seen the trees that are planted that should be planted where they are and the type of trees that they are. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, so that's on page 43, and it's
how about if we require them, Jim, and when the house lot is developed, if the builder or the homeowner wants to come in and provide an alternate plan to the street trees that just shows us the, you know, that there's trees in the front or there's landscaping in the front. The whole idea is to not have it look like you have a farm field and you've just plopped four houses in the middle of the farm field and there's no plantings at all, because that will happen as well.
I agree with that, but I think that would happen years ago. I don't think that happens now. I mean, they're building a subdivision in Coventry, and some of these people, they don't even have their driveways paved and they're having their houses landscaped.
Yep.
I mean, I would do that. I mean, I think if, as an alternative, if they came in with an alternative plan, I just think plopping trees, I mean, builders go out, they buy the cheapest, ugliest trees that they can find. Half of them die. I mean, I don't know. I think that's a good alternative. I think we should have it that either that or that the homeowner comes in with an alternative plan.
I like that.
Yeah.
That they come in with an alternative plan, because everybody has a different idea of how they want their property.
But I don't think it should be eliminated. I mean, there's good reason to require street trees, but I don't mind, you know, an alternative plan. And I don't think you need the landscape architect for the planting plan. But I do think you need them when you site your development. So that's my opinion.
Okay, we can look at the right. We can look at the right place.
All right. That's just my opinion.
It's after 9 o'clock, and we have to do anything special.
So I would suggest that we do two things then, and just in accordance with what Jim's saying. Instead of having one shade tree for every 40 feet, let's change it to 50. So that's only four trees. And you could say one shade tree shall be provided for every 50 feet of frontage, or an alternate plan to satisfy this requirement is presented.
Sure.
And that doesn't necessarily have to be shade trees. I mean, it could be fruit trees, for instance.
Yeah. Fruit trees. Yep.
Right. I think that's a better way of doing it.
All right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if we require trees to be planted every 50 feet, and if you look at the list of trees that they're suggesting, I know we might not see it, but our kids might see it. 50 feet apart, yep. If you have maple trees, oak trees, you have a mess on your hands.
Yeah.
So that's a good alternative.
Right. So they can either provide them every 50 feet, or they can provide something that's equivalent, but isn't necessarily just a line of 50 foot trees every 50 feet. All right. There really wasn't anything else outside of the last page 45, which is just certification requirements and the filing requirements. Just I have a note for them to all be the same as the other filing requirements, so we're not getting 14 sets of plans in that. That's in section 19, 0.2 right here. So that would get changed as well. I mean, that's all I had. I don't know if you got all your questions out.
Well, I think you can go to work on them based on our discussion. And if anybody has any other comments, they can.
Yeah, while we're talking about trees, we don't protect any ancient trees anywhere. I mean, a lot of things, like the city of Hartford, you can't cut down
a Charter Oak.
You can't cut a tree down, even if it's half dead. You protect all their trees unless you have a replacement plan. I guess what I'm thinking of is those people that clear cut everything and then they have water runoff issues when they're cutting down ancient trees. I don't know. Isn't there a place where we have things that we put on plans that we have to note, like stone walls and
tree lines and stuff?
Right. Should we put in ancient trees? Or am I being too?
No,
am I being a tree hugger?
I agree with you.
Okay.
Not only ancient, but to cut down trees that old.
But at the same time, usually if they're healthy, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, if someone's being threatened by an elderly tree.
I mean, sometimes you just don't have a choice, and sometimes you do. You know, there are people in this world who don't want any trees on their lot. They want a nice big grassy lot, and they, you know, have a beautiful lawn with one small island, and that's their idea of, you know, landscape design, and that's what they want.
And they
bought the lot, so I mean, they really should have some say in what it looks like.
The other problem, when you go into a subdivision, they start moving. Piling topsoil and everything else on them. That they die.
They kill the tree, right? Exactly.
They kill the tree.
Yeah.
Okay. So, site development plans information to be included.
Patrice, I have one thought, and the other thing I would just mention about trees and about pretty much everything else is, with the subdivision standards, they can ask for waivers. So if it's prudent to not require it because there's existing vegetation, the commission can issue waivers. At the very top, we did this when we went through and did this process in Ashford. At the very top of the document where it references effective date, one of the things we noted was the original effective date of the initial adoption, just because every time people ask, we're not running around trying to find when the date was. Thought there was an early date, but I don't know if it was the original. And it's just, that's really,
it's
just
not sort of 2011 like listed here. It's in the 50s or 60s or something. But yeah, it's a great idea. We did the same thing in the zoning regulations because it wasn't there either. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an A. September 19th, 1955.
Was subdivision?
Yeah. Adopted September. On September 19th, 1955, that's in 410-1.1A.
First page.
Oh, yeah, it's right there. Yeah. Sorry.
So, Patrice, on page 16, number L, this is under information to be included.
Yep.
We have existing stone wall fences, foundation trails, et cetera. You could put in ancient trees right there.
Now you have to define ancient tree.
Yeah. I think there's something that says larger trees.
I don't remember seeing it.
Yeah, I don't see it off the top either.
I need to be conscious. We have two stems, basically. Those are not ancient. Those are something broke.
Roll F in the document.
And on that
F.
Previous page.
200 years ago or something.
No, I was saying, if you wanted to search for that term in the document.
In the middle.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm doing right F. now.
Okay.
Yep.
So not an ancient. We don't have 9. Almost all of
just maybe one or two. The rest are just.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Legs and crops.
That's all it says.
It doesn't seem to.
And my opening up the can of worms, potential wood areas, and ledge outcrops.
You could say trees. Trees over so much caliper, whatever you want.
There are some definitions on the internet of ancient trees. In
America. Oh, okay. Probably different from species.
Like, isn't there like a standard language that a lot of places use for trees, large trees or something like that, just to identify? They usually do anyway. When they give you a plan, you'll usually see like a, you know, 18 or 22 inch tree or whatever like that. They'll mark them on the plan.
Yeah, a lot of times they'll require that this existing survey pick up anything in 12 inches in diameter.
Right.
And
that's a good number.
I've done that in just some of my plan reviews, required or asked them to notate on the plans, you know, existing mature vegetation to remain, and just ask that they keep it. Sometimes it's, you know, it's vegetation that's just a mess and isn't really going to do anything to the subdivision. Other times, yeah, they're an existing mature tree and you'd rather have them preserve that than plant a, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
3-inch caliper maple.
Right. Yeah. If they can preserve it. Sometimes they just can't for whatever reason, but.
So where would you consider that the best place without messing up the numbers?
I think it's actually part of the survey requirement?
Page 16.
But we don't have that wording in here. Keeping mature.
No, I meant, isn't it part of when you do a survey to point that out automatically? But I can put it under L. Because a large tree could serve as a landmark for a field.
Mm-hmm. You can keep mature vegetation, whatever that was that Mike said. I liked that.
We already have that in the end where it talks about the planting.
Okay, so where? Oh, at the end.
The end with the trees. Existing trees of at least 4-inch caliper may be used to satisfy planting requirements.
Yeah, but I think when you want your site plan, you should have it marked in there. It needs to be in 16.
Well, okay. Mike, you wouldn't put that in the list of things to require, though, would you? In a site development plan? As information to be included? No. That would be a condition of approval.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's something that is unique and, you know, not likely to be for every single one. So I think it could be handled as it comes up.
Right.
Okay.
In other words, they would have to tell us where they were in the survey, and then we could, as part of the condition,
say, got it.
To maintain the sweetness.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. I have 904.
I have 906, but okay.
So, this you've heard the discussion. This is in your hands, and you're going to bring it back to us.
Yep.
Okay, any correspondence?
I do not have any, no.
And that means it's your turn, Jim.
I move we adjourn.
Who seconded?
Tom Crockett. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Reading is
adjourned. I have 905.
905.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Patrice and Mike, nice job on that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. A lot of work. Wow.